Much ado about vaccines. Once one does come out in this country, who will line up to get the shot? That's the subject of the Longview with our contributing analyst, Neil Milner. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning.
So, gosh, everybody's talking about this.
Yeah, everybody's talking about it, and it's pretty fluid when you ask people now whether they'd be willing to get the vaccine when it becomes available. It appears now, and this showed up in a poll this morning that the Star Advertiser reported on about Hawaii, and in some other ones, that roughly 30 on the low side to 50%, which seems now to be the number that shows up more and more of people say they're willing to get it, and then there's a chunk of people who are undecided, and then a relatively small percentage that says never. Remember, they're dealing with a hypothetical here, anything else. It's not just the number that's important. It's the number that public health specialists think is important to really drive the disease to the margins, I guess would be the layperson's way of saying it, where they think you need about 70% of people getting the vaccine. And we're not there yet, but as I say, it's pretty fluid. And some of the early studies of the polio vaccine, it was initially about 60% of the people said they would get it and others wouldn't. This is a very different time, though. It's different from the polio vaccine because you have social media, because anti-vaxxers are more organized, because science has become politicized. Well, everything has become politicized. Republicans and Democrats differ in these polls in regard to their willingness to have the vaccine. Republicans are less likely to. And this comes up all the time, but I haven't seen any evidence that really shows it other than saying it's possible because of Trump's pushing the vaccine so hard and his what I think is basically a fantasy that you're going to have it at the end of October. People worry about it not being safe, but it's clearly not good evidence for that. Should also point out that African Americans who have suffered disproportionately by the pandemic are slightly less willing, well, considerably less willing to get the vaccine, probably because of a historical distrust of medicine, which has not treated them very well over the years.
Yeah, you know, I think of that cereal commercial, you know, let Mikey try it, you know.
So. Yeah, well, yeah, that's right. Although, and here's on some studies, older people are willing to be Mikeys, and that kind of follows, saying, you know, we're the most vulnerable. By we, that would include me. On a recent study, the younger folks were more willing to do it. So that even that is up in the air. The real question is, how do you convince people who are against it or who are reluctant to move in the direction of taking the vaccine? And what's interesting to me is the kinds of mass persuasion sorts of things you have to do and the kinds of one-on-one persuasion techniques you have to use are pretty much the same as you have to use for anything else, like getting people to vote, getting people to give to charity. And that's where you're going to see a lot of interesting and very important sort of things happening. And there are two things that I think people have to realize about convincing folks who are reluctant not to be reluctant. Two things that definitely don't work. One of which is to simply present statistics. You know, we've had $200,000 deaths by COVID. If you just present numbers, people don't react very well. The reason is that our brains are much more wired toward stories, that telling stories about people who have suffered from the disease or telling stories about neighbors that have suffered turns out to be just generally a more important thing. I mean, the interesting research on that is that brain is really wired to accept that kind of information better than anything else. So those are the things that the storytelling is a very important way to drive persuasion, both at a mass level. If you watch the ads that'll start appearing when we get closer, there'll be a lot about stories, as are political ads. But it's also a way to try to convince your friend, your neighbor, that he or she should think about the vaccine.
Well, I think we've just seen recently, right, the State Health Department, you know, launching campaigns, highlighting stories from people who have survived COVID but
yes.
have had a very difficult time recovering.
Yes.
And to drive that point home, like, you know, this is not something to mess around with. It could affect you even though you don't die.
That's a scare story, and mm-hmm. I understand why it's a quote, logical thing to do, but it's not necessarily the best way to change minds. People don't respond to fear alone very much. What may be more important, at least if you look at what gets suggested, that piece I sent to you, that Huffington Post good piece about what you do to try to convince others,
mm-hmm.
You try to get them to see that people they respect in their social network understand the need for the vaccine, or you try to find a person who is a kind of ethical leader in a group. And you, in fact, you address a lot of your pro-vaccine or reassurances about vaccines to the social network and not so much to the person, because that's how we tend to respond to things. So if you look at those Department of Health ads, the way they're more likely to become successful is if you reinforce them by smaller groups discussing them, you know, with a social network. Again, it's very much like we do all kinds of other stuff in regard to politics and so on. People are more likely to vote if they know that their neighbors have voted, never mind which way they voted, just as they know their neighbors have voted. So it's, you know, a big country, very complex, trying to get mass messages out. But at one level, this kind of small-scale stuff is very important. And the one other thing that's very hard to do, to get people to do, because we're so polarized about so many things, is to get them to listen to the people who are reluctant to get a vaccine, to listen to their viewpoint, and to try to reassure them on the basis of what their concerns are. For example, they're worried about the medicine. They may not think they can get access to it, all that sort of stuff, and not to oversell. But in this day and age, when social networks and political networks overlap so much, you know, we don't have as many small group influentials around us or small groups around us that differ very much from us. And so if you try to move outside that space to talk to others, it's not very easy to do.
Well, I know there's always the concern about overselling something too, right? There's the
yeah.
whole trust thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah. It's just, as I say, so much of this is still a work in progress, because it's still hypothetical in regard to when the vaccine will be here, when we'll have one, what's it going to be like, what kind of reassurances come along there. But this gets so much wrapped up in, as I said before, into polarization, where political polarization and social polarization kind of overlap very much, so you tend to be speaking to people who are very much like you, much more than say that you had to do in the past. But I think, you know, as I said before, I think 50% isn't so bad for now, but it's a pretty high bar that we have to get to in order to make this thing, I use the word marginalize. You're not going to get rid of the disease. In order to have enough of the population vaccinated so that community spread becomes much, much harder.
You had mentioned availability, too, and I know they're talking about what having the military and the first responders, you know, access.
Yeah, and now you're starting to see stuff. And again, you know, here's the problem. You can't trust the CDC information right now because it's so erratic and jumped around, which is a real tragedy about what's happening there. But if you look at what people are starting to say now, in fact, N.B. Fawcett in her piece this morning in Civil Beat mentions this number. By the time the whole vaccine system gets ramped up and out and everybody who wants to get it can get it, that could be well into 2021.
Okay.
So there's two questions. When will the vaccine be available? Who gets it first? And then how long is it going to take for everybody else to get it? And you need a mass distribution system for sure. And the other thing you need, and real fast, is that some of these vaccines appear to require some special kind of storage systems, like really, really cold refrigerators. And so you got to make sure all of that's in place.
Right.
That's why the orders have already gone out to public health, to state health departments and so on, to get your system in place, because there's all kinds of licensing and so on. And
yeah, it's not going to be easy.
It's not going to be easy.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Neil.
Take care.
We have been talking with Neil Milner, retired political science professor at the University of Hawaii. He joins us regularly with his thoughts on the long view.